이스카만.
이스카만, 예.
예.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the reading news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to everyone joining us from near and far. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of insightful conversations and real national dialogue. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and this is On the Radar News Analysis, where headlines meet context. Of course, it's Wednesday, the 14th of January, 2026, and the time is 4 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. Now across the country, the rhythm of the new year is fully in motion. Alarm clocks are ringing earlier. School uniforms are back in rotation and lunch bags are once again being packed, some with care, some in a rush, and some stretching household budget to their limits. Now the school term is underway, and with it comes the familiar mix of hope, pressure, and adjustment for Namibian families. Now for many parents and guardians, this season brings renewed responsibility, ensuring children are fed, transported safely, and emotionally supported, often against the backdrop of rising living costs. Now for some households, the daily question is not just about what goes into the lunchbox, but whether there is enough to go around at all. Now, meanwhile, teachers and school administrators have returned to full classrooms, navigating limited resources, overcrowding, and infrastructure constraints, all while carrying the enormous responsibility of shaping young minds and safeguarding learners' futures. Once again, they are being asked to do more with less. Now, education remains firmly at the heart of Namibia's national conversation as schools settle in into the new term. A difficulty, but necessary questions demand attention. Now, from overcrowded classrooms and insufficient facilities to teacher workloads and access disparities, the gap between policy intentions and everyday school realities is back in shape and focus. And what is clear is this. Education is not just a sectorial issue. It is a national priority that directly shapes social stability, economic growth, and the country's long-term future. Namibia stands at a defining moment. The decisions taken now by government, education authorities, parents, and communities will influence not only this school term, but the direction of an entire generation. Now, right here on the radar, we go beyond the headlines. We interrogate the gaps, examine lived realities, and ask the questions that matter most to ordinary Namibians, from urban centers to the most remote villages. From 1300 hours to 1430 Monday to Friday, On the Radar News Analysis brings you expert, insightful, grounded analysis and conversations that don't just inform, but empower as well. You can tune in every Monday through Friday in all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM app, or tune into our Eagle FM website, or stay engaged through our WhatsApp channel for updates, discussions, and audience polls. So wherever you are, in traffic, at work, or at home, picking up kids from school, stay with us right here on the Radar. This is where Namibia pauses, reflects, and plans its future, because on the Radar, the truth is never out of reach. But let's get right into today's top stories. The Government Institution Pension Fund has officially rolled out the commencement of its long-awaited pension-backed home loan scheme, which took effect on Monday, the 12th of January 2025. Pardon me, 2026. Now, the scheme will be administered by First Capital Treasury Solutions and Kuleni Financial Services. And GIPF has cautioned members not to submit applications at their offices, that is at GIPF offices, but rather through this to administrators. And also, GIPF has advised members to access their benefit statements through GIPF member portal to ensure that qualifying amounts reflect their most recent income details. According to them, the pension-backed home loan scheme will allow members to use up to 33.33% of their pension savings as collateral to purchase a service lend, buy a new home, build a home, or improve an existing property in both urban and rural areas. Now, the scheme also allows members to transfer existing home loans from commercial banks or other financial institutions. Now, joining me in studio right now, presently in studio, not telephonically, is Amos Kambode, and he is a GIPF's marketing manager. A very good afternoon to you, Amos, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. I'm happy to be here, and good afternoon to the listeners.
I'm so glad you're here, because a lot of people, GIPF having announced this news, there's been so many mixed feelings, some excited, some, you know, stretching. So I'm glad you are here to make it clear.
Okay. Yes. I'm very excited to be here in the studio, because I'm going to share more information. Yeah. I don't want people to be confused whatsoever, but we're going to give them information that they need.
Yeah.
And then so that they make the best and informed decision when it comes to the pension backed home loan.
Okay, Amos, let's get right into it. What exactly is the pension-backed home loan scheme? Make it clear for us.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much for that question. I think that's the most important question. In order for me to answer the question, I still need to give you some background.
Okay.
Okay. GIPF, as a pension fund, has a mandate to make sure that members' benefits are paid. And the main purpose of pension funds is basically to look after you when you're in retirement. But we should not only look after our members when they are in retirement, but we also should also make sure that our members, as they are going to work right now, as they are working, they're also living comfortable. Yeah. In 2012, GIPF started with what we call a mortgage-backed home loan. This is basically members were able to borrow, to get loans, to build houses. But with this one, it was just basically benefiting members that are residing in town, or they want to buy houses in town. As you know, the bulk of our members, they don't retire to be in town, or they don't live in town. And a lot of them, they live in rural areas or villages.
Yeah.
That's why now this pension-backed home loan came to answer that question of members that are residing, or they want to buy or to own properties in villages. This is basically the pension-backed home loan. Talking about the mortgage-backed home loan, as the name says, a mortgage. This scheme, it was run and administered by First Capital, and it was launched in 2012. whereby members get a loan to build a house in town, and then the collateral or the security for that loan for you to build a house, it was your mortgage, the house itself, the property that you are buying. But now with the new one, as the name says, it says a pension-backed home loan.
Okay.
What does it mean? That basically means that you are going to access a portion of your pension, which is a loan, but this one is now backed by your pension, not necessarily by the property that you are going to buy, to build or buy, but by the pension that you have with the GIPF. That's why it's called the pension-backed home loan.
Now, a lot of people, before we get also deeper into the conversation, a lot of people, Amos, are saying, oh, is it Amos or Amos?
whatever it depends on where you come from.
Okay.
Part of the world, yeah.
Okay, cool. Amos, now, a lot of people are wondering and questioning to say, but it's my money. Why am I getting a loan? Why am I taking loan? Where is the collateral, you know? So make it clear also in that aspect.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we get lots of that question. Why am I getting, it's my money. Why am I getting, why are you giving me a loan? Okay, one thing that you should understand that, like I said at the beginning, is that, you know, the mandate of a pension fund is to make sure that you are well off or you are better off when you're on retirement.
Yeah.
And that's a promise that we make to our members. It's called a loan because you don't borrow directly from your money. You don't take money from your pension, but your pension credit or savings, it acts as a security for the loan that you are getting.
Okay.
This basically means that when you happen to get your loan, your application to be approved, we are not going to take money from your pension. Your pension will be exactly the same and growing as the GIPF. If you have a 1 million at GIPF and then you happen to qualify for 300,000, we are not going to deduct 300,000 from 1 million and then you're only going to have 700,000 at the GIPF. But the 1 million at GIPF is still going to be the 1 million growing up, but you still have the 300 to build your house. There's a difference.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's becoming clearer even to myself.
Okay. No, it's good.
Okay, cool.
That's my work to make sure that you understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Amos, now let's say I have 1 million, right? A GIPF. And now come my retirement time, I walk away. Let's just focus on 1 million now. Now come my retirement time and I took a loan. Yeah. Right. I took this, GIP, Asian Bank, back home loans, scheme. Will I still, will we now minus the 300 completely, or how exactly is that going to work now?
Okay. This is how it works.
Okay.
The main thing here is that, why we are not allowing members to borrow directly from their pension, it has a lot of impact on the growth of their pension. Because if you have a 1 million and then you take a 300,000 and then you only have now 700,000.
Yeah.
The 1 million 700,000, they can't grow at the same rate. That means the 1 million will grow faster than the 700.
Yeah.
That's why we don't want members to borrow directly from their pension, but rather get a loan on the side that does not impact the benefit that they have right now at the GIPF. When you are going on retirement, you should make sure that this loan is paid off, so that we give you your full pension benefit. As I said, you need this money more than you need it now when you are going on retirement. Because on retirement, you're not going to be getting a salary from your employer. You'll be at home getting a salary from GIPF.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we want seriously members to understand that their pension right now, it's used as a security or collateral for the loan that you are getting. And you don't borrow directly from your pension. It's indirectly. For a simple reason that we don't want you to have any effect or impact on the growth of your pension. This is not only with the GIPF. It's not only unique to the GIPF. All pension fund, private funds in this country, they are doing the very same thing. It's only that we are only introducing it now to the government employees. That's why there's a lot of confusion. Why are you borrowing me my own money? But other private funds, they are doing it already. That's why I'm saying it's not unique to the GIPF. But it has been in the market, in the industry for some time. And it's only new to the employer, to the government employees. That's why they're a bit confused. But they should know that you don't touch your pension. What you get is a separate loan that is backed by your pension. Your pension only comes in. Let me give you an example. If you happen to resign, you take a loan like of 300,000,
yeah,
and then you happen to resign. before we pay you out your resignation benefit, we need to take out that money, the 300,000 that we borrowed. But if you are going on retirement, we should make sure that before you go on retirement, you have paid off this loan and then you get your full pension credit.
Okay. I have another question, follow up to that one. But first, I want to ask, you spoke about if they were to borrow directly from GIPF, for instance, from their pension, then the rate at which the interest would grow is not so much compared to if they had not borrowed directly.
Yes.
I want to understand, how was this decision, how did GIPF come to this particular decision? Is it looking in their favor or looking in their client's favor?
Okay. It's basically in the favor of a member.
Okay.
Like I said at the beginning, is that if you borrow directly from your pension, you are reducing the amount of credit or saving that you have with the fund. And I've given an example for 1 million and then you are taking a 300.
Mm-hmm.
You take a 300 and then you're only left with 700,000.
Yeah.
Now, instead of you growing, your pension growing at 1 million, now your pension is growing at 700,000. Let me give you an example of maybe your the interest, the growth of your pension is 9%.
Yeah.
A 1 million at 9%, a 700 at 9%, which one is going to grow faster?
Definitely the 1 million.
Exactly. That's why we are saying members are not borrowing directly from their pension, but they are getting a separate loan that is only backed by their pension. Your pension only comes into effect if you happen to resign or you don't finish paying your loan or you default. There's only time that your pension will come into play. That's why we are saying it's a loan that is backed by your pension. That's why it's called a pension-backed home loan. You remember when I was talking about the mortgage-backed home loan? That's you get a loan to buy a house, a property in town.
Yeah.
But now, because your pension is not the backup for that property, but the property itself, it becomes the backup for the loan that you are getting.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why the other one is called the mortgage-backed.
Yeah.
Because the property itself
backs it's the one loan, which is being used as collateral.
If you default whatsoever, and then the administrator has the right to sell or to repossess your house and sell it in order for them to recover the loan.
Yeah.
But with this one, it's called the pension-backed home loan because now you're borrowing against your pension.
Yeah.
That's basically mean your pension becomes the backup for this loan that you're getting.
Okay. Amos, that is so clear. But now I'm a mathematician. You must know that.
Yeah. No, it's good.
Okay, cool.
Because I have done also math.
Yeah, great. Great.
But we shouldn't go into numbers because otherwise we are going to confuse.
We'll confuse the listeners, of course. Yeah. No, I'll make it, I'm for more of, layman terminology.
Yes.
That is what I always advocate for. Now let's calculate it in this aspect. Getting a loan and, let me put it like this. Borrowing from the pension directly, of course the interest will go down. I get that. You make that so clear. And having a loan, that I'm going to borrow, which I'm gonna pay back with interest. Did we weigh the benefit in that aspect? Are perhaps active members not gonna be now paying back the loan that they are borrowing outside GIPF. Isn't that going to be more expensive with the interest and all that kind of stuff? Is that really something?
Yes. Yeah. That's a good question.
Okay.
About the interest. You know, members are borrowing against their pension.
Yeah.
And they are borrowing this money from GIPF.
Okay.
Which GIPF, it's the one that is administering their pension.
Yeah.
The interest that they are paying on the loan that they are going to get, it's going back to their saving. That's basically they are paying their own interest. This interest is not going to First Capital or Kuleni, but they are paying it back to their own savings with the GIPF. That's basically mean it's not going anywhere to any other person, but to themselves.
Okay.
The reason why there's no loan in this country that doesn't have interest is because time value for money. Your $10 today cannot buy you the same value tomorrow. That's why we always have an interest to make sure that the money is going up. Yeah, to live with
interesting.
The time.
Now that's
time
clear.
Value for money.
Okay, that answers my question. Let's get to the 33.33% of their pension savings as collateral, still maintaining the example of 1 million. Now let's say, for instance, I have 1 million and 33.33%, that'll be about 330,000 That's all I qualify for. But in general, living here in the capital city, for instance, an average house is not 300,000. So it, okay, that's somehow not enough.
You're talking about the money is not enough to acquire a property.
Yes.
Okay. You know, we live by the law.
Okay.
And the Pension Fund Act, which governed govern the pension funds, not only GIPF but the whole pension fund industry, yeah, says you can only borrow against your pension a 1/3 of it. And then the 1/3 is a 33.33%. We only put it into percentage so that we want members to understand the amount of money that they can qualify for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a GIPF thing. It's basically just something that is in the industry.
I see. Yes. Okay.
It's the same thing as the Labor Act. It says even yourself, when you are taking things, you buy things on credit and everything.
There's a limit.
The Labor Act says you cannot take more than 1/3 of an employee or a staff member's salary. It's the same concept. Because you need to live.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
Let me say, if you had to change that now to 80%, and then because now we want to make sure that everyone can afford a house, a property in Ludwig, in Windhoek,
yeah,
and then you say they can borrow up to 80% of their money, will they be able to survive if they had to default? And then they are going to sacrifice their whole pension, which I think it's not in the best interest of the fund and the member in the end.
Emma, so it's clear. Now, who qualifies to apply for this pension-backed home loan scheme? I know I've heard about active members, but I think let's get more into detail into that. And what key eligibility requirements should members be aware of?
Okay. The scheme, it's open to all the GIPF active members.
Okay.
But I don't like saying active members. I want to say the qualifying active members,
okay,
because not all members are going to qualify. We know we have the minimum of 5,000 that people can borrow, and the maximum is the 33.33%.
Okay.
But you should also know that we are not only going to look at how much you qualify for a GIPF, but we're also going to look at your payslip. Okay, because now we need to
remember that. Now you're talking.
You remember when I was talking about now what the Labor Act says, that you cannot take more than 1/3 of a person's salary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we need to understand that there are people that are not going to qualify because now maybe the payslip is too much decorated with other loans and all those things. You might say we qualify for 300,000, but when the administrator are going to do your qualification, they are going to do the assessment, they might see that you can only qualify, you can only afford to take 100,000. Therefore, but the maximum that you can take is the 1/3 of your pension. Therefore, that's why we are saying not it's qualifying active members, but not every member that might benefit from the scheme.
Okay. Now, another thing also, the fund has emphasized that loan cannot be used to consolidate non-housing debt or to purchase movable items such as household appliances, vehicles, livestock, or other immovable assets. Now, say for instance, I already have a house, but then I would appreciate this pension-backed home loan scheme, perhaps to finish my house. That is allowed,
yeah,
right?
That's allowed.
Okay.
Anything that has to do with your house is allowed. What is not allowed is things that has nothing to do with the house.
Okay.
You going to get a loan, you get a 100,000, you qualify for 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go to a retail shop and you go for shopping.
Buy very expensive leather sofas. Yeah.
Would that benefit the household? Because what we want our members to live comfortable. We want our member to sleep comfortable. That's why we are saying this has to do with your house.
A lot
of people we know, people with two legs, that once you say this is open to anything, they are not going to do anything that has to do with their houses. Some are going to buy expensive cars, but they can't sleep in the car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to be very comfortable. You must be well rested when you come to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Pension Fund came up with all this type of standards to make sure that people have a property or a house to live in, so that the following day they are able to go to work and then contribute more. And the time to go on retirement, they have something that they can call home.
Interesting. Can you explain to us about the interest rate again?
Okay, the interest rate, how it's going to work is the GIPF interest rate is going to be at 2.5%. That's what we are going to charge members.
Okay.
But now it's going to be repo. repo rate. Mm-hmm. We all know that the repo rate has been
going down.
No. Repo rate, we have no control over repo rate because it's been administered, and then it's a Bank of Namibia thing.
Okay.
It's a rate at which a commercial bank borrow money from Bank of Namibia. We have no control over that. Either it's going up or going down, but the only thing that we have control over is the 2.5%. But now it will be now repo rate plus 2.5, which currently stands at repo rate now stands at
6.5.
Yeah, 6.5 plus the 2.5, it's going to be a 9%, which is much cheaper than other commercial banks or financial institutions.
Okay.
That's why we seriously want our member to make use of this scheme, because to us, it's going to benefit, especially the people that want to go build houses in villages.
As you know,
the majority of our members, they live, teachers, nurses, government employees, they live in rural areas, but they don't have shelter. That's why even when you qualify for 100,000 and you live in a village, you'll be able to build a nice, proper house where you can live in.
Yeah.
But if we don't have this type of schemes, then our members that are living in rural areas, they won't benefit anything. Currently, we have other facilities that banks, commercial banks, or other financial institutions can borrow people to go build houses. But they don't have this type of schemes whereby people can get money to go build elsewhere. But they only give you money to go build in town because they know if the moment you default, you're unable to pay, and then they can always repossess the house and then recover their loan.
Mm.
But now, this is the only scheme, the pension backed home loan, that you can use the money that you have borrowed to go build elsewhere.
Okay, I think it's very beneficial, strongly beneficial for people in rural areas. But then again, I think it's also kicking one in the foot for those of us who are in the city. And I would really want to first build a proper house in the city. For some people really want to, because you live here, the kids are here, your family is here. Build something small at the village, because you probably go there once for some people.
Yeah, the needs are different.
Yeah, true.
I tend to disagree with you a bit there.
Okay.
Yeah, in the sense that we have brothers and sisters that don't know any city or town. They just live in a village.
Yeah.
In their home. Therefore, there's no point for me to go build in, Shakati if I live in Omere. Do you understand? Therefore, I need to build my house where I live. I reside.
I live in Windhoek.
Yes.
I was born in Windhoek. I would rather.
In Windhoek.
Yeah.
But also, it's up to how much you qualify for.
That's the thing now.
Yeah. We cannot say we are going to go now because you want a 1 million house.
Mm.
Therefore, we should make the qualifying amount to 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the law that I talk about that? Mm-hmm. You can only borrow a certain percentage of your
one third.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Amos, now what happens if a member defaults on the loan, exists employment, or retires before the loan is fully repaid? And how will this impact their pension benefits?
Okay. If you resign, let me say you resign or you get dismissed you got dismissed.
Yeah.
You should make sure that before we pay your resignation benefit, we deduct what is due on the loan.
Okay.
And then we give you the leftover.
Uh-huh.
As we are going on retirement, we want to make sure that our members, before they go on retirement, their loans are paid off so that we can give them their full credit, pension credit.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? Let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back. We have yet more questions. Stay tuned. This is On The Radar News Analysis, 0832-888-401 is the number in studio. I'll repeat that slowly. 0832-888-401 is the number in studio. Should you have a question for Amos, he's still around. Please do call through. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lingusala butokwa kwa sichaba sana Namibia sesipila mamu wa sizo. Ye kite muso ya butokwa kuzwele la likola njimo vundui mezi ni pukelezo ya muvu. Muteleze kaswanelo ni kuikabe alingusala butokwa le ni mabasi amina. Vau mpila mabapa ni vona mane chwalo ni mizwari. Muika mbuse kwa kezo ya kulekisa ni kuleka muvu wa sizo. Liva katila kuri. Mubu wa maino mana Namibia ulo wilo kimubuso. Meha upsikalo melwa ni hainyani kule kiswa manzila ifika mbaifi. Kuitenga maka ulo ya te kiswa ya mubu uo, kuungi waku baka ulo ya kulo wa mulao. Mubu wa sichava wa maino kaku ya kamulao wa buketa lizuwa wa siri Musa 2002. Uhanisa kezo ye chwalo. Zemu kwa naku talimana nizona hamu itenga mate kiso isi kamulao kizela telela. Kamulao, lifosi likuwa naku lengi wa masto kisikapa kutomelwa tifo ya mashirini. Kustatalisa sizuale sasichava. Kule kisakapa kuleka mubu wa sizo kukuwa naku tisa lifapani ni mizeko mahala sichava. Zemu toko kuziva kizemu. Mubu wa maino kiwalu na kaofela. Mimutu ni mutu utoka kufumana kavelo ya yona. Kubihali tava za mubu zelo wa mulao. Haiva mule muhile ni tava zeska ni tifazwa za tekiso ya mubu. Mususuweza ni kuelezwa kubihatava ye chwalo kwa kute amina ya sizo. Kachengo, kaka ikemezi kaka vona za mubu wa sizo. Kapa ofisi ya likolo yelibu kaufini mina. Lususuweza hape kukona kusebeza hamoho kungele la chwalo ni kukona kubukele za mubu wa luna nilimbule za nyambi. Kakweza chwalo kuekeza kwa bukamuso. Mubuso hauna kubaka ulo ya sinyehelo ya mubu, zeti swakiri tekiso za mubu kwa mukunda. Muhupule, mubu wa sichava wa maino wa kataleha. Luubu keleze kaswanelo. Luitumezi kwa salisano ya mina. Lingusa la waile sile. Litu sizwe katuso ya mashiringi kuzuelela kwa mubusu wa naha Namibia ni naha Germany. Mwaka ulo ya panka ya Germany Development Bank. Kutualitava kabutungi za butokwa. Mukone kuzuela kwa office yelibu kaufini mina. Kapa kuikopanya ni mubuleli waliko ola njimo hundui mezi ni pukelezo ya mubu. Fanombolo 061-2087-604. Lipuzo kaufela zimu na nizona. Mwalilu mele kumuoka meli walikolo.
Welcome back, and we are back from the commercial break. Let's take a listen to a conversation ahead with Priscilla Simasiku, one of the administrators. And now we're going to engage Priscilla Simasiku, manager at Home Loans, Kuleni Financial Services. A very good afternoon to you, Priscilla, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yeah. So Priscilla, since the Government Institution Pension Fund has launched and recently operationalized the pension-backed home loan scheme that is to enable qualifying active members to access a portion of their pension savings. And of course, I do understand that Kuleni Financial Services is one of the administrators being them too. Just how is Kuleni going about with this pension-backed home loan scheme?
Thank you very much for that question. So we have launched the pension-backed home loan scheme on the 12th of January. So we have deployed people already that are busy on the ground, assisting with the HR offices, giving information and guiding the application processes. Mm-hmm. We also have deployed people in the regions that are stationed in the regional offices that will be helping also the people, the members that are working in the regions with the pension-backed home loans application as well. That is completing the application forms and then submitting the application forms for approval.
Mm. Okay. Now, since Kuleni Financial Services is part of the administrators that are involved, how then do you administer or how do you then go about to identify who qualifies to take part in the pension-backed home loan scheme?
Okay. The qualifying is actually based on your one third. You have to be employed by the government or a contributor of a pension fund that goes straight to GIPF. So this is all the government employees are the beneficiary of this scheme. So we will qualify them based on their one third transfer of the benefit.
Okay. What are the eligible criteria for members, and what's the percentage or maximum amount of pension savings that can be used as collateral under the scheme?
Okay. So the maximum is your 1/3 of your transfer benefit.
Okay.
That's what you would qualify for. The loan is given over a term of maximum 20 years, which is 240 months, or you can decide to take it lesser. And we also look at your age also plays a factor of what you qualify for. We also look at an issue of affordability, that is, we do not want to put people in financial struggles because of the loan, but we would qualify you based on your financial background, or we will qualify you based on what you can afford financially.
Interesting. The percentage, from what I'm hearing, is 2.5% plus the 6.5. Can you explain how the percentage actually works?
Okay, so the 2.5 is the interest rate. So this is a loan, meaning that it is going to be loaned to the members with interest. So we are going to loan the loan at repurchase rate plus 2.5%. The current repurchase rate is at 6.5%. So we add that 2.5, that adds us, that brings us to a 9%.
To say, in terms of somebody getting a loan, obviously for those that qualify, which one is more beneficial, or who are more likely to benefit from this loan? Is it those ones that are middle aged, or those ones who are towards heading to 60, about to retire, or is it those ones who are quite young and have recently started employment? Just give us a background of who mostly is meant, not really meant, but then who mostly is likely to benefit on a higher amount.
Okay, I would say that everyone is likely to qualify, depending at where you want to either buy or build. The pension-backed home loan is given to the members either in the proclaimed areas or unproclaimed areas. The proclaimed areas is areas like Windhoek, where we have local authorities, where you can get a title deed. And in unproclaimed areas, people in the villages. Let's take, for example, I would like to build a house in my village, and I'm working there. I'm a teacher. I'm working there. So I would like to build something decent for myself.
Yeah.
So you will find that the affordability will still be on my 1/3, but the building and the costing of building in the village compared to the costing of building in town will be different.
Of course.
Yeah, so it will depend actually where you want to build. It will also depend on your age as well, and it will depend to what financially you can be exposed to.
Let's say, for instance, then I qualify for perhaps $1 million Namibian dollars. That means I can only get about 300,000. Is that correct? 330, somewhere there.
Yes, you can get 330,000. That is your 1/3.
And say, for instance, now I'm in Windhoek, and of course, an average house doesn't cost 330,000. How then am I supposed to get the funds that I actually need to purchase a house? Because otherwise, then I would need to go and get more money or borrow more money again, which I'm trying to avoid. How then do we go about such a situation?
Okay, so the main purpose of the pension fund housing is not to burden our members, number one. Number two is you will have, even with formal financial institutions, you need to qualify for it. So if your income, an installment on my income, cannot afford me a $1 million house, it means that I should stay within my means. I only qualify for 300,000, and this money is not only to buy a new house. It can also be used for renovations.
But renovation, if someone has a house, right?
Yes, renovations if somebody has a house, and if you are buying for the first time, you do not have a house at all, all credit approvals still have to apply. Because remember, the pension fund is also governed by our Pension Fund Act. We do not want to put people in situations where they cannot be able to afford to repay back the loans.
Okay. You say it's for active members, that qualify, right? When we talk it up, we're talking about active members, who exactly are we referring to? And in terms also of those that qualify, what if they already have loans and perhaps they're thinking, I would want to get this pension-backed home loan scheme to help pay off my other debts that I've accumulated in buying a house?
Okay. So to answer the question of debt consolidation, this instrument does not cater for debt consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
It is specifically for housing. Like I mentioned earlier, we are governed by the Pension Fund Act of Namibia that we need to align. Our product is aligned to that. So we do not allow for debt consolidation. We do not allow for possibly you would want to buy a car. It's a chance to buy a car. We would not allow for personal loans. You want maybe to take your child to a private school. This product is not for that. The product is designed to make housing affordable and accessible to the members of the GIPF fund. And what I meant with active members is members like people who are employed. Mm-hmm. They receive a salary every month. They contribute towards their pension on a monthly basis. Those are the active members.
Mm. Interesting. Yes. As you say, people that are members of GIPF, I take it most members of GIPF are government employees. Do we also have private employees that are then benefiting from this scheme?
We do have, but only those that are banking their pension with GIPF. But for now, the rollout is for the government employees. So we still have SOEs that are banking their pension with GIPF. But that rollout will come at the later stage. But the focus now is for the government ministries.
Mm-hmm. Priscilla, what is the most frequently asked question in regards to the pension-backed home loan scheme?
So the number one question that is frequently asked is, this is my money. It is my pension.
Yeah.
Why should I get a loan from it? And why am I charged interest? Number one is your pension is just used as a pledge. So it is not cash money that is been withdrawn. Your full balance of your pension transfer balance, it is still intact. It is only affected when you resign, you lose your job. In events of death, that's when we will request a settlement from your pension. Other than that, if you service your loan until you retire, you still get your full pension benefit paid to you, as it is was supposed to be paid without a loan attached to it.
Mm.
The second question that is mostly asked is, I'm about to retire, and I really want to build something decent for myself for retirement, and I do not want to really go and take my pension in the end and build a house and be left with nothing to live on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we look at affordability. If the event to say you are left with 5 years, we will tell you in the 5 years, this is going to be your installment on your one third. Can you afford to pay an installment within these 5 years? Because remember, your repayment as well, the repayment amount is also affected by the number of years left. The younger you are, the cheaper it is for you to pay. The older you are, the expensive it is for you to pay. But if we do an affordability test and you do qualify on your current income and you will be able to service the loan in your remaining terms, we will offer you that loan.
Okay. Another thing, what probably makes an active member, although they qualify, but then it kind of reduces the amount of money that they can then borrow or they can then get as a loan? What are some of those factors that then sort of reduce their amount?
Okay, so factors that can reduce the amount, number one, it could be the age. Number two is affordability. So let's take, for example, if I'm indebted with other loans, personal loans and stuff. Mm-hmm. We also look at will you be able to sustain yourself after this loan has been given to you?
Okay.
Yeah, so we do not want to financially burden you, to put you in a position where you cannot leave because a loan has been extended to you.
Priscilla, lastly also, just how then is Kuleni Financial Services assisting in this regard of active members getting the loan, and obviously for a house, considering that sometimes it's really difficult to even locate a house for that matter? What particular documents need to accompany, and is perhaps the Kuleni Financial Services also helping in terms of finding homes for the members, or the members have to find their own homes? Just a background and maybe clarity for those that might have that question.
Okay. So Kuleni Financial Services, we facilitate the funding only. When it comes to finding your house, a member, you will have to go and find your own house. Once you are ready and the house is within your one-third qualifying amount, you obtain a deed of sale. Then you go to your HR, you obtain the application form, you obtain the wholesome booklet, which is the government collateral booklet. Then you have your ID, your pay slip, your proof of ownership in the events where you are just renovating. Then you take those documents, give them to your HR office. They will request a benefit statement. Once all the documents are in order, they will send the application to us for assessment. When we are done with the assessment and it is approved or declined, we communicate accordingly.
Interesting. Anything that I probably left out, Priscilla, that you will want to make clear to the listeners out there?
Okay, so it is a very, very good product, and it is there to help the Namibian nation to actually acquire decent houses. And they can call us if they need any clarity. We do have an email address, which is homeloans@kuleni.com.na. They can send any queries there. We would be glad to assist them. If they need any guidance further, they can still go on the website to get more clarity on the product and how it works.
Okay, I see. Priscilla Simaseko, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis and making those clear.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. And of course, you had it from Priscilla Simasiku, and she's from Kuleni Financial Services, one of the administrators that are responsible for this pension-backed home loan scheme. Now, still in studio with me is Amos Kambode. Amos, anything perhaps that Priscilla said there that you would want to also just make clear, that you think maybe was not so clear, or how?
I think she highlighted everything so clearly,
yeah.
And I don't have anything to add on that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a question based on something that she has said, and then maybe you think your listeners didn't digest it nicely, and then I can maybe clarify that.
Cool. Especially also on the aspect of where she said, for those who are, for the younger ones, getting the home loan backed, the pension-backed home loan scheme.
The younger you are, the cheaper it becomes. Yeah, the older you are, the
more expensive.
Okay, that's what is she's implying is that when you are young, you have more years to pay.
Payback. Mm.
Because usually home loans, you pay them for 20 years.
Yeah.
And if you are younger, you are 40 years, you still have about 20 years to go. Therefore, you can pay it in 20 years. It's become cheaper. But if you are older, let me say you have 10 years to go on retirement, that's basically you need to pay this loan for the last 10 years that you are in service. And like that, it's going to be more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of you paying it in 20 years, now you're paying it in 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a bit higher than someone with 20 years. That's why the younger you are,
mm-hmm.
the more cheaper it becomes, the older you are, and then a bit expensive as you only remaining with a few years to go.
I understand that now.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let me read a statement by the Affirmative Repositioning Movement. It is also responded to the pension-backed home loan scheme. Now the Affirmative Repositioning, or AR movement, says it has welcomed the Government Institution Pension Fund announcement that the pension-backed home loan scheme will commence, or has commenced, on Monday, and that is the 12th of January 2026. describing it as a historic milestone in Namibia's housing journey. Now, in a statement issued by its spokesperson and head of communications, George Hidipo Hamber Kambala, also member of parliament, AR say the scheme represents a transformative policy shift that allows government employees to access their pensions to buy, build, or renovate homes, converting years of public service into security, stability, and dignity. According to AR, the initiative corrects a long-standing structural injustice in which public servants retired with pension benefits but remained trapped in overcrowded, living conditions or informal settlements. Another movement noted that the pensions are now being positioned as active instruments of social justice, wealth creation, and human settlement. AR further stated that the scheme signals a decisive move towards reducing homelessness among formerly employed citizens, affirming that housing is a fundamental human right rather than a privilege. Now, the movement emphasized that access to housing strengthens families, stabilizes communities, and improves education, health outcomes, and economic participation. However, AR cautioned that while the pension-backed home loan scheme brings hope to thousands of government employees, it excludes the majority of Namibians living in informal settlements, that is according to them, who remain outside formal pension systems and conventional housing finance. Now, this includes informal economic workers, unemployed youth, the elderly, and non-income households, according to AR. Now, the movement called on government to use the momentum created by the pension-backed home loan scheme as a springboard for broader and more inclusive housing reform. AR urged accelerated delivery of service to land, support for incremental and self-building housing, expansion of low-cost and community-based housing finance, and urgent upgrading of informal settlements with dignity and respect. AR concluded by calling for the same political will and innovation demonstrated through the pension-backed home loan scheme to be extended to the landless, unemployed, and informal, and the informally employed, stating that the 2026 should mark Namibia's shift from managing homelessness to ending it through people-centered and inclusive action. Now, back to you, Amos. Something that I am getting, and I'm definitely sure that I'm getting it right, I would say that I believe here AR is trying to say that those in the rural areas are going to be disadvantaged, and I'm seeing it's the opposite from what you've actually taught us all this while.
I think the Honorable, I appreciate his efforts and then the reinforcement.
Yeah.
But I think he got it a bit not as per the book of the scheme.
Mm,
okay. This scheme, it's open to everyone, as long as provided you are a qualifying member of the GIPF. That's why we are saying this scheme, you can use it either in a proclaimed area or unproclaimed area. That's what we are talking about. You can use it in town or in a village.
Mm.
But when he's talking about informal settlements, I think maybe he's referring to locations. And okay. Yeah, maybe he's talking about that. Maybe not talking about rural or a village.
Okay.
But what I want to caution him is that he's a member of parliament, he's a lawmaker. And we all know that most of the people that live in informal settlement, they don't have ownership of that land. But if a member of the GIPF owns a plot or land in informal settlement, they can qualify, provided that they can prove that this is their own on paper.
Mm-hmm.
If they have certificate of ownership for a specific land in an informal settlement, yes, they'll qualify.
Yeah.
But I'm also putting it to the Honorable George Kambala that he's a lawmaker. He should make sure that people in informal settlement get ownership to some of this land that they are occupying. This is the only way that they can benefit. But if the lawmakers are not making it possible for our members also to own land, and then there's no way that they're going to benefit from the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
But it's open to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we are very proud and happy and excited about this new product that we are offering. Mm-hmm. All what you want is help from them, like him talking about the informal settlement. People must get ownership of that land in order for them to benefit. Mm-hmm. They don't benefit if they don't can prove that they own. It's the same thing as in a village.
Yeah.
You cannot just come to us and then you say, this piece of land is mine without papers. We need proof that this land belongs to this particular member.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, you build on your uncle's land.
Yes, you know, when you build on your uncle's land, it's also going to bring some conflict. You all know that people, once an uncle pass on or a parent pass on, people always fight over that land and all those things. That's why we want seriously to make sure that members, there are no conflicts, there are no issues. We want people who own these properties to have some sort of ownership certificates to say, this is my land.
Mm-hmm. Amos, what are some of those... I've asked Priscilla, what are some of the questions of most frequently questions that people are asking? What are some of those frequently asked questions in regards to this pension backed home loan scheme that people are asking you that you think needs to be made clearer?
Okay. The most question that is always asked, why am I borrowing my own money?
Mm-hmm.
There's a question that members are always asking. People must understand. I think I've cleared that one also at the beginning.
Mm.
That people must understand that yes, it's your money, but this money that you're talking about, it has a purpose, and the purpose is that it's supposed to look after you, or it must look after you when you're in retirement. That's why we are saying now you borrow it now, so that you pay the loan that you are getting, and then when you are going on retirement, you have your full pension savings.
Yeah.
There are many reasons why we don't. The Act does not permit any member to borrow directly from their pension. Yes, I think the Pension Fund Act says they can borrow direct, but like I said, it impacts the growth of your fund.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, now members they want to eat butter that is buttered on both sides. Now currently they are earning a salary that they are getting, and they also want to borrow from their pension already. And now they're earning a salary. They also want to get money free of charge from GIPF, which I think in the end it's not going to benefit members, because when they're going to go on retirement, they're not going to have anything.
Yeah.
And they become who is burdened? They'll become government burdened. That's why, you know, remember when they say it's my money. But they must also know that it's not only them that contributing to this. It's a combination of their own money from their salary, but government is also topping up on this contribution that they are making. That's why government is saying this, that no, you borrow it as a loan, you pay it before you go on retirement, you enjoy the full package as you are going on retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And Amos, lastly, perhaps to see, are there perhaps more packages in the pipeline, or maybe more additions to be made perhaps to in regards or towards the pension backed home loan scheme? Can we expect more? Or in the meantime, will you roll out this one and see how it goes?
Yes, you know, this is a very brand new project for the GIPF.
Yeah.
And we are very, as a GIPF, we are a very innovative organization or institution. We always come up with new product, but for now we are focusing on this one to make sure that we roll it out nicely. We want to make sure that our members benefit. We also want to make sure that people enjoy life as they are working towards their retirement. But if there will be any other new product that we are going to launch, we are also going to communicate this to them. But for now, let's focus on the pension backed home loan. I'm just urging our members to utilize this opportunity, because if you wait until last minute, good opportunity never return. Therefore, they must make use of the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amos, thank you so much. Perhaps your last words as we close off this conversation.
Okay. I would just like to seriously to inform and to caution our members that let them make use of this opportunity. Let them make use of this scheme so that they can build something that they can call home, and they can do this through our administrators. We have two processes, application process, how they're going to be done. As you all know that we have two administrators. We have First Capital, and then we also have Kuleni. They two have different application process. Let me start with the Kuleni process. The Kuleni, you start with your HR, at your employer, at your HR. It's where you get your application form. And the HR, they'll be able to assist you on different types of documents that you need. You start from there. The second aspect is you to visit the GIPF, or you can request through your HR. You don't have to come to GIPF even. You have to request your benefit statement through your HR from GIPF so that you can see your qualifying amount. And then from there, it goes now to Kuleni for further processing and assessment, checking the qualifying, your affordability assessment and all these things. Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to work.
Okay.
With First Capital, you go directly to their offices. The application forms are there. They're going to give you all the sort of documents that you need to submit. And then they're also going to request for a benefit statement.
Okay.
What we are calling our member is that they should not flock to the GIPF offices because they won't be able to be assisted there with the application process because, like I said, First Capital, you go directly to them. With Kuleni, you need to start with your employer at HR.
Mm. I think I have one more question that I actually would want to ask you. Why was a third party necessary? I know perhaps couldn't GIPF still do this without a third party and without having to borrow directly from...
Okay. Yeah. That's one of the questions that also members are asking. But as I started here, I know my product very well. Mm-hmm. When you talk about retirement benefit, talk about death benefits, when you talk about resignation benefit, if you can even call me at 2 a.m. in the morning, I will tell you the process and everything. But if you ask me, as Amos Kambodi, you ask me the square meters of a house, how deep the trench or how many square meters the toilet should be or how tall the wall should be, I won't be able to answer that. That's why we have given it to a specialist to handle it.
Interesting.
We are not ruling out the issue of bringing it back to GIPF sometimes. Is when you have capacity to do it.
Okay.
Like I said, now with our mandate is to make sure that our members are paid on time, their claims are processed on time, while we are giving the scheme to the specialists, which are Kuleni and First Capital, to do it on our behalf.
Amos, your answers are very clear. I must say, I get it, and I sure hope and I trust that the listeners themselves do get it. Amos, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Okay, thank you for having me. I hope this won't be the last time. I'm always a phone call away so that I can give more information.
Okay.
Maybe hopefully the next time when I'm in the studio, we should let the members call in so that they can ask their questions.
Yeah.
It's because of time and everything, but we can always do it. I'm always available. I enjoy doing this because my work is to make sure that my members understand and also seriously, fully in support that they should make use of the scheme as a benefit. It's not a burden to them, but it's a relief.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amos. And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, this is on the Reading News Analysis, the show that brings you insightful conversations for you to understand better. Tune in every time through Eagle FM, whether the website, the app, or follow us on WhatsApp. Now, we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. We still have News Beyond the Borders coming your way. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. Now brace yourself for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, of course, we bring you news beyond the borders, starting off economic, regionally and then continentally and then over to international news. Let's start off in South Africa since it's still early, school beginning. Experts warn on early school exits. Let's take a listen to that.
Children in South Africa, we're told, drop out of school long before they reach their matric, and boys are leaving the system at a much higher rate than girls. Education Minister Sifiso Kwakhube says while some girls return to school after leaving, boys tend to never come back. Let's try at least get to the root causes of this with educational psychologist Ravindri Govender, who joins us via our video link. Thank you so much for your time and welcome to the SABC News Channel. It's an interesting pattern that was highlighted by the department earlier this week when we, of course, were digesting the matric pass rate from 2025. And I wonder whether there are, I don't know, perhaps more obvious reasons about why it is things are panning out the way they are in our country.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. You know, we're living in a time where systematic inequalities and socioeconomic inequalities and barriers are central to these problems. Things such as poverty, financial, household strain remain the key drivers to these high dropout rates that we're seeing. Even in no-fee schools, indirect costs such as transport, uniforms, stationery often lead to learners being unable to meet the obligations needed for school. You know, then other things such as when there's a weak learning foundation, academic difficulties that profoundly impact the learner's ability to engage with the content and leaves the learner feeling disengaged, disempowered, and ultimately results in the learner dropping out from school. Other things such as inadequate basic literacy and numeracy skills make further contributes to this feeling of discouragement and disconnection from school. Then you have things such as your teenage pregnancy, gendered barriers, high bullying rates in our schools that also contribute towards, you know, the further dropout rate that we are seeing. It's, you know, constantly changing from school to school, where learners don't have some sort of stability, which further increases the high rates of dropout.
Yeah, you mentioned there this idea of a weak foundation, and I wonder if we can delve a bit deeper into that, because part of what we're also hearing from, I don't know, scholars and academics is that by the time pupils reach school, so I'm talking grade one and grade eight, if the foundation isn't there, you've actually kind of really lost the battle, so to speak. And I can't help but wonder if we're placing enough of an emphasis in those early formative years, given even the disruption we're going through now, where, of course, ECD centers are being moved from the social development department under the education department.
Absolutely. You know, there can never be enough emphasis placed on early literacy and numeracy skills. And given that there is this move, we need to ensure that quality of the outputs don't change. We need to ensure that our learners are still being empowered to develop their numeracy and especially their literacy skills in South Africa, so that we are already facing an uphill climb when it comes to literacy in South Africa. We need to ensure that every step is and every measure is put in place to ensure that our learners are able to actively keep up with the curriculum as the year progresses.
Yeah. South Africa already spends so much of its GDP on education, amongst the highest on the continent and sometimes even the world. And whenever we pose those kind of questions to government officials, we're told that, you know, the issues we are seeing in our schools and the outcomes thereof cannot be restricted just to the schooling environment. You know, in many instances, schools perform as best as the community allows them to.
Absolutely. You're 100% right in saying that the responsibility is not that of the school on its own. The responsibility lies with the parent. It lies with the individual learner themselves. It lies with the community for greater support. You know, starting out reading programs on a Saturday morning, using religious organizations to empower our learners to engage in leisurely reading, to develop reading centers in our community where there's limited access to resources so that we can have communal reading to ensure that learners are constantly engaging with literacy, and not just literacy from a leisurely perspective, but also engaging in literacy in terms of topical events so that they engage with reading in a more critical manner as well.
Yeah. A lot was made of the uptake or lack thereof of the so-called gateway subjects by matriculants. The education minister concerned that not many people are taking up the math core, the accounting, the physics, and the likes. And the debate for me has been quite interesting, Ravendri, you know, because do you force people to take up subjects that you know they're unlikely to do well in because of the potential benefits down the line? Or should we focus on what people are actually good at and allow them to excel on that score?
You know, it's such a catch-22 because, yes, there are benefits down the line, but forcing a child to take on a subject like accounting or physical sciences may also result in that learner feeling quite disempowered when they're not able to manage the subject. We need to assess the strengths and the weaknesses of that specific learner and play to those strengths while developing those weaknesses. So using the subjects that are less intensive to assist the learner in developing skills and competencies that they will be able to use later on in their life when they engage in a professional career. Going on to maths core, it is of utmost importance that an individual, you know, engage in some sort of mathematical-based subject, whether it be maths core or math literacy. Hopefully, the learner is able to engage in maths core. But at the end of the day, we also have to be realistic. There are individuals and learners who are not able to engage, to cope with the demands of maths core. And therefore, we need to allow these learners to learn at a pace that is more acceptable for them.
Mm. The matric results, of course, are only but one of the matrices we could use to kind of gauge how the system is doing. And in most instances, it's more qualitative. You know, we speak about how many passes there are, the rate thereof, how many people make it into universities, etc. But I wonder if there's any or if there's enough focus on the qualitative data itself. You know, how good are these passes? And, you know, to what extent are pupils leaving the system in good stead to essentially step into the real world, so to speak?
100%. I think there needs to be a much more focus on the qualitative analysis of these results. How competent are our learners for the real world? Do they have the key skills needed to be able to survive and thrive in the real world? How effective is the curriculum that is being taught in these subjects? And we need to look at that versus the statistics that come out in terms of the matric results and compare the two from a more holistic point of view.
Fair enough. Thanks very much indeed for giving us your insights. Plenty to think about as we continue, of course, gauging how well our education system is doing. Ravendri Govender is an educational psychologist. Once again, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Meanwhile, Tourism Ministry in Zambia has assigned a 132.3 million kwacha with Livingstone Roads deal.
This project is quite strategic as an investment because it's aimed at enhancing the city's infrastructure, improving mobility and access to tourism facilities and visitor experience. It enhances Livingstone to position it as a premier tourism destination in the region. So I would like to see even some of those houses which are looking a little bit more tired, but they are a heritage site for us. They keep the history of what Livingstone is all about because historical aspects are quite important in the tourism equation. But you want to say that private investors, money talks, so they can be able to talk to some of those people who own such properties along the Musutunya Road and be able either to maintain at least the historical infrastructure of how the house looks.
From our side, we are promising that we'll run with the agenda from the client. We'll give you a good product, quality, we'll run with speed and at the right price. We are here to make sure that we help you as the client to achieve your goals.
Meanwhile, African nations are increasingly service Chinese debt in yuan in order to ease dollar pressures.
$500 million. Kenya has converted about $3.5 billion of Chinese loans linked to its standard gauge railway from dollars into Chinese yuan. A move, authorities say, will lower interest costs and ease pressure on scarce dollar reserves. Ethiopia, which has been restructuring its external debt after default, has also held talks with Chinese lenders on settling part of its obligations in yuan as it seeks cheaper financing and greater flexibility. Zambia has gone a step further already this year, becoming the first African nation to allow some Chinese mining companies to pay taxes and royalties in yuan, aligning state revenues with trade and debt flows as China remains its largest copper buyer.
It's a positive move for African countries to do arrangements of currency trading with China. It actually opens more door for investments to come in those countries. But also the fact that they're going to be servicing their loans in Chinese currency, it also takes away the hurdles of looking for the United States dollars. I think the critical thing we need to appreciate is that the U.S. weaponizes their currency. They use it to put sanctions on countries.
Experts are observing a shift away from the U.S. dollar towards gold as a store of value and the yuan as a convertible currency, driven by growing geopolitical tensions. China has long encouraged the use of its currency for lending and trade. The recent momentum could see other countries heed that call.
So I foresee a number of countries joining the Chinese payment platform as a way also of protecting themselves and also furthering their trade relations and economic relations with China.
Over the last decade and a half, China has emerged as one of the leading bilateral lenders to African nations, responsible for development finance for infrastructure projects encompassing mainly transport and energy. As Beijing looks to make the process smoother, it could pave the way for even more China-Africa development cooperation in the future. Farai Makutuya, CGTN, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Uganda has ordered internet shutdown ahead of elections.
Ugandan authorities cut internet access and limited mobile services across the country today, 2 days before an election in which President Yoweri Museveni will stand for a seventh term after 4 decades in power. The Uganda Communications Commission ordered mobile service providers to shut down public internet connections in order to curb misinformation, disinformation, electoral fraud and related risks. Security forces have detained hundreds of opposition supporters in the run-up to the election and repeatedly fired live bullets and tear gas at campaign events in support of Museveni's leading challenger, pop star Bobby Wine. The 81-year-old Museveni, who came to power in 1986 after leading a 5-year rebellion, is Africa's third longest ruling head of state. He has changed the constitution twice to remove age and term limits, and his dominance of Ugandan institution means there's little prospect of an election upset in the East African country of 46 million people. Political analysts say. Now, to talk about the Ugandan elections, we're joined by Dr. Delta Milayo Ndo, who's a political campaigns specialist at the Political Campaigns Resource Hub, a subsidiary of the International Center for Political Campaigns. Dr. Ndo, good evening. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. It might sound innocuous to someone that the internet and telecommunications in the country has been shut down on the eve of an election. But how significant is such an action?
Okay, thank you so much for having me. So when we're looking at Uganda specifically, when we're comparing the political campaign in 2016 and 2021, the political campaign currently was more digital. It was more hybrid, which means there was heavy reliance on the internet across the divide. Both the incumbent President Museveni and the leading opposition party leader, Bobi Wine, used hybrid campaigning. So by that, we meant that every physical action that we saw was designed to have a digital afterlife or a digital footprint. So online and offline political campaign tactics were merged, which tells us that the internet was a strategic infrastructure of both political campaigns. And it's interesting the timing at which the internet is being shut down, at a time when the incumbent will retain an advantage because the opposition depends heavily on digital platforms to mobilize, to communicate, but especially to monitor the elections. Some of the tools we've used across political campaigns include parallel voter tabulation. And to use those tools effectively, you need the internet. So for the opposition, this is a crucial blow. And it leaves the nation really without a capacity to have any scrutiny, any oversight, any access to information, or any way of feeling that the process is transparent. So we immediately query not just the outcome of the election, but the legitimacy of the process, the fairness of the process, so to speak. So it's a very crucial decision. And even the reasons given, you know, for the shutdown, which are around risks of disinformation, the reality is the internet is a powerful tool for countering disinformation, a powerful tool for fact-checking, for constant and continuous official communication that undermines and undercuts these nefarious uses of the internet. We saw that with the Malawi Electoral Commission. They were very robust in how they used the internet to ensure that they were sending out official communication constantly, transparently. So it's a very difficult stance to accept that internet needs to be shut down for elections to be run in a secure way.
Yeah. Now, when there's an internet and telecommunication shutdown, it typically means that there's a media blackout as well. And what is being reported is heavily limited. We saw this in Tanzania not too long ago, a couple of months ago. What effect does that have, or how much ability does that provide an incumbent to rig an election, so to speak?
Well, it definitely raises a lot of red flags, because the whole point of political campaigns and the election processes themselves is the idea of democratic choice, free choice, fair choice, and that idea rests on the need for transparency. And the moment you cut off people's access to information, their capacity to communicate, their capacity to monitor the results as they are trickling in, you are effectively creating a scenario where suspicion of rigging becomes inevitable.
Yeah.
So definitely that's an issue.
Yeah. I saw a video going viral on the internet, on Twitter in particular, a few days ago, of Bobi Wine protruding out of a convertible vehicle, campaigning in a rural part of Uganda. And it seemed that quite a number of the villagers there came out in support of Bobi Wine, wearing T-shirts of his party's regalia. And it seemed to me that there was a momentum about him. I'm quite surprised that he's not yet been arrested, which, of course, was the case in the previous election a few days just before that Bobi Wine was arrested. Is that a campaign strategy that, given the conditionalities on the ground, that works?
Okay, so I love that you used the word momentum, because that's what we observed also in terms of the political campaign tactics that were used in Uganda. So with these tactics, we're looking not just at mobilization, we're also looking at persuasion. With mobilization, we see a push to galvanize committed supporters. And persuasion, we're looking at how are you winning over the undecided voters. So usually persuasion is a strategy that works better for the opposition, but it requires sustained, safe, and local engagement, which is what Bobi Wine is trying to do. But obviously there are significant barriers for opposition activity in Uganda because of repression, because of state apparatus that's being deployed. And so,
will Europe draw the line on U.S. actions challenging international norms? Well, let's take a listen.
Dane Fergus, now the Trump administration's recent actions in Venezuela and, of course, its rhetoric regarding places such as Greenland has exposed its willingness to both sideline longstanding international law as well as NATO principles. Now, despite major pushback from its allies, government officials in Washington say that these moves are required for national security purposes. As the U.S. continues to test the patience of its transatlantic partners, CGTN's Zhu Jiaxin asks, at what point will they finally say enough is enough?
The United States' seizure of Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro has laid bare a hard truth. America is showing greater disregard for international law, and its unilateral approach to diplomacy no longer spares its allies. Now, no one can imagine that European leaders and politicians are bracing themselves for a similar ill-fated scenario when it comes to Greenland's precarious future.
We don't do it the easy way, we're going to do it the hard way.
If you have such a major ally as the United States, being basically negligent of its own obligations and being very responsible in the rhetoric, at least, when it comes to the sovereignty and the territorial integrity of other allies in the NATO, this is unprecedented.
The White House is now discussing the options to annex Greenland, including military actions to invade Denmark. This is more than a diplomatic irritant.
It's also concerning for the international relations in terms of the stability of the system that we have built since the World War II. If it seems to be an erosion also of international institutions, at least threat of erosion to a large degree.
The subdued response from most EU capitals to the Venezuela operation reveals a continent trapped between principle and power.
If we're thinking about great power politics and spheres of influence, Venezuela falls within the Americas. The United States, through its national security strategy last month, has been emphasizing making the Western Hemisphere more prominent in terms of its own space. And so I think for many Europeans, there's really little to gain from criticizing Trump, because doing that is only going to antagonize him.
The Trump administration's national security strategy, with what experts call a Trump corollary to the Moran Doctrine, has turned European autonomy into a potential strategic liability. Abandonment of Ukraine or wars, a real threat to European territory like Greenland.
The Europeans are trying to balance support for Ukraine and trying to ensure that the Americans don't abandon Ukraine with their talks about peace with Russia, while at the same time having to navigate and negotiate this tension over Greenland. Let's be honest, Denmark or even the other countries within NATO with Denmark are not going to withstand American military pressure to take Greenland.
But if the US can unilaterally dismantle international norms in its backyard, then what stops it from doing the same in Europe's neighborhood?
Europe would act probably on the level of European Union, basically breaking in with the relationship of the United States. I don't think it will be able to enter into any kind of military hostilities because of its nuclear power, etc. But there's going to be breach in the trade agreements, probably sanctions on the United States for the first time.
Yet Europe's strategic awakening remains slow and uneven, and that's despite open threats against its territory.
We are faced with the fact that America has changed, and therefore America's relationship with Europe has changed. But there has been a lot of talk over the last decade or so in Europe about the need for greater autonomy, strategic independence, but we've seen very little of that in actual practice.
Europe's credibility in the global south has also been weakened, in part due to perceived double standards. When U.S. officials describe regime changes as democracy promotion or dismiss sovereignty as obstacles to negotiations, Europe faces pressure to define clear red lines or speak out and against Washington's actions.
And with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onko Nanadingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi. From Inda Afa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same radio frequency, same website, and same radio app. That is Eagle FM Namibia, from 1300 hours to 1430. Goodbye.